You all know how obsessed I am with Quince, okay? Their clothes are timeless, they feel luxurious, they look elevated, and the quality is way beyond what you'd expect for the price. I've said this numerous times before, but I'm telling you all, I used to be a wardrobe stylist, and I wish Quince was around when I was one, because Quince would be the ultimate spot that I would be getting clothing for my clients and recommending to my clients, okay? It's so chic and timeless, and the quality and the variety. And again, the price, it's just simply the best. I love Quince.
Yeah, Quince really is incredible. We're talking 100% European linen tops starting at $30, washable silk dresses and skirts and soft cotton sweaters, versatile warm weather pieces you'll reach for again and again. And the best part, everything from Quince is half the cost of similar brands. Yes, I said half. By working directly with the top artisans and cutting the middleman out, Quince gives you luxury without the markup. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing practices in premium fabrics and finishes.
I just adore Quince. I've gotten some stunning pieces for the summer. I've definitely been obsessed with Quince's 100% European linen pieces. And for summer, they are everything. They're so comfortable and they're lightweight and they're breezy. I have numerous pairs of their European linen pants and their high-waisted shorts. The cut on both is incredible. It's everything. They look good with everything. And I feel like a dream in their 100% European linen strapless maxi dress. I have it in blue pinstripe. It gives Summer by the Atlantic dreamy vibes. Paired that with some 14 karat gold bold hoops from Quince, an Italian hand-woven mini shoulder bag in cognac, and an Italian soft loafer, all from Quince. This outfit is perfection. It's dreamy. It is summer, okay? You just need to check out their website and scroll. You'll be so wowed, I promise you. Also, side note, great spot for gorgeous gifts. I'm just saying. So give your summer closet an upgrade with Quince. Go to quince.com/momdad for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/momdad to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/momdad.
When you go on holiday, there is no finer achievement than doing absolutely nothing. Nothing on the beach, nothing by the pool. Walking kind of nowhere and chatting about nothing. As an Expedia member, you can save up to 30% when you add a hotel to your flight. So you can have a bit more money to go out there with great ambition to do absolutely nothing. Expedia, made to travel.
Welcome to another episode of Chatty Broads with Becca and Jess.
Broads, we are here. I am so... This is a deep breath. I'm so excited because I don't know if you remember, this was like many episodes ago.
When was this? Where was I?
You had like a family obligation that came up last minute and you missed this guest that I'm about to introduce. But numerous episodes ago, again, before some like Bachelor recap, I'm like, I need to have someone come on this podcast because I need help with my brain right now with everything going on, the disagreements.
There's always something going on.
There's always something going on these current days. So like who is the best person to come on? And obviously I right away thought of Cara Lowenthal. Broads, if you have not heard this last episode we did together, it's called Unfuck Your Brain, and that is Cara's podcast as well. But Becca was unable to be here, so now we're all together.
Yay! Now we can unfuck two brains at once.
Yay! We love. Thank you so much for coming back.
My pleasure. As I was just saying, you were my last in-person podcast interview in the before times. So wow. I feel like
in the pre like
revisiting. Yeah, before times.
BC before COVID.
Yeah, that works. Okay, so can you give a little bio, a quick about you,
yes,
so that our listeners can know?
Who am I? What do I do? You got my name right, which is always a pleasure, even though. I mean, you'd think that, but people get it wrong all the time. I'm Cara Lowenthal. I'm a master certified life coach. And I basically teach women how to identify the ways that they have internalized socialization and messaging about from society about what women should be like or what's important about women or what's valuable about women, all the kind of sexist messages that we're not even always aware of, how those impact your brain. So I teach women how to identify those in their own thought patterns and then how to literally change the way that they think so that they can create authentic confidence, which has to come from inside, and how you think about yourself. You can never achieve it through achieving anything outside of yourself, job, partner, changing what your body looks like, changing your family, any of that kind of external stuff. So that's what I do in a nutshell. I help women unfuck their brains, which is why that's what I name my podcast.
And the podcast is one of my most favorites, especially because broads, if you haven't started to listen, there's so many that are just like great nuggets where it's like 20 minutes, like 15 minutes all of a sudden to start my day.
I love those kind of episodes. We're not so great at doing them, but I we're not so great at doing them.
Well, when you have multiple people talking, it's harder. I mean, it's just me, so I can do 15 minutes. But if each of us talk for 15 minutes, now we're at 45.
Great point. Reframe that. You also are a Harvard graduate lawyer, which to me, I can never get over it.
I also didn't realize you could get a master's in life coaching.
No, I have a master coach certification. So,
oh, okay.
I'm not sure if there are some universities do have like certificates in coaching. I don't know if anybody offers a master's degree in it yet. Yes, I used to be a lawyer. I was a reproductive rights and women's rights lawyer.
Wow.
But I am no longer a lawyer. I let my bar membership lapse, which for a lawyer is like, you've truly gone over to the other side. Like, now you can like never get back. Like, lawyers are so risk averse. Yeah, like my father never even practiced law. He went to law school like 45 years ago, never even practiced law. And I think he's still an active member of his bar because we're just like, you never know. What if someday you have to go in there, represent yourself? I'm always like, I'm gonna hire a real lawyer then if I ever
you need committed. To go in somewhere.
Full commitment. Okay, so this is one of our big things, Kara, is obviously, I mean, the current times have led to a lot of divisive feelings.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much I think that's gone into it. So one, you have people who have been cooped up in their houses. I mean, I guess most of the country, unlike California, has been released. But I guess here in LA, we're still feeling very much in the quarantine like everyone went into at the end of March. So you have that. People are stuck inside their houses. They're stuck with people maybe they don't want to be stuck with. We're all creatures of habit. So people are out of their normal loops. Then, of course, we have the huge election coming up in November, which is a really big deal. Then we have everything happening in the wake of George Floyd and a whole like sort of mini civil rights revolution that is continuing on, maybe not even mini. I mean, there's like so many things going into this sort of pressure cooker. And then we're also having a lot of natural disasters too, at least in California. So many people's homes are being threatened by fires right now. It's like
it's Louisiana. Nuts. I mean, yeah.
Colorado, I believe. Yeah. There's fires going. I mean, there's just things going on all throughout the nation. And I feel like there's been a pressure cooker of a lot of tension bubbling up and a lot of division between even people who are usually united.
And so we were talking like, and we've had conversations together about how we feel like that there's a few things that this has done, right? Number one, it's obviously bringing up a lot of important topics that need to be discussed. But there's also that question of, for instance, when I have a conversation with a friend of mine about systemic racism, and this person does not believe it exists, and so, of course, rage starts to fill my body, and then I want to argue, and I think it's necessary to have a conversation. We were talking about having these conversations with maybe friends and family who, you know, we said maybe kind of suck. We're talking about boundaries. Where is the line that you draw where you're like, I feel like this is something important that we need to talk about. But at the same time, when is it too much? Is it too far?
Or also like, even like you're saying people that suck, it's like, okay, the reason I know why you're saying that, but this is something I've been struggling with is, how can I separate someone and their beliefs from who they are but I sometimes I'm like, should I be doing this? Like, is it really healthy for me to say, no, I'm not going to be around this person. I'm not going to associate with them, et cetera, if they believe X and Y. And maybe for some people, it's about like setting a healthy boundary because, like, you know, if you're, let's say, a Black person and you're friends with someone who doesn't believe that like racism in the US exists, you might need to set a boundary like for your own emotional and mental health. But like for me, for example, like, do I, you know, do I maybe have like a, how do I navigate that if I'm not feeling directly like threatened by this person's belief, but I feel like their beliefs and stuff are threatening others? How do you navigate that? And because also I think a big issue that's going on with the upcoming election is that things have become so divided that we are unwilling to listen to anyone that disagrees with us. And I find myself very guilty of this, of being like, I don't want to talk to this person. I don't want to engage with them, and like, fuck them. Bye bye. But what is, you know, is that really great? And does that create more problems? This is all stuff that Justin and I have been pondering. So maybe I'm kind of word vomiting right now, but it's
No. I think everybody's asking these questions. So I think that you discover the first time you get coached, usually your coach is like, well, I'm not going to answer that question. That's not even the right question. We're going to answer a different question. But I think that, right, the way that I work really focuses on the idea that your thoughts create your feelings, which create your actions, right? And so one of the reasons that humans get stuck in like not knowing what to do, like, is it better for me to engage the person or is it better for me to not engage the person? Or what's the better way to be an ally? Or like, what's the right boundary? Is that we're trying to decide what action to take when we're not clear in our thinking yet, right? So it's like you have like a tangled mess of thread, and you're like, oh, I'm just going to try to figure out how to thread this needle over here, even though back here is this huge tangle. And so no matter what I do over here, it's not going to feel good. It's not going to feel aligned. Right. So I always want to back up and say, the question isn't what should I do? The question is always, how do I want to think and feel about any given situation? Because the truth is that there are a lot of different things you can do and a person can do, right? And people end up coming to different conclusions about what they want to do. But anytime that you are trying to figure out like the right decision, I always say like, there's no certified letter from the universe coming, right? You're never going to feel resolved that way. And if you take an action to try to get away from a feeling, that never works, right? Because you try to change what's around you, but your thought is what's creating your feeling. So if you're feeling angry at someone and you block them, your anger doesn't miraculously evaporate, right? Instead, you go and like talk to a million people about how you blocked them and how wrong they were, and you get a bunch of validation, and then, right? Like, the action doesn't
feel attacked.
I know. You almost went horizontal there. I don't know.
I was just like, oh no.
You're like, oh, I gotta hide behind the couch. Right. So that taking the action never resolves the complicated thought and feeling, especially if you're a woman and you're socialized to always doubt yourself. No matter what you do, then 10 minutes later, you're going to be texting each other being like, well, I don't know, I blocked them, but now I feel guilty. Maybe I shouldn't have blocked them. Maybe that was the wrong decision. Right. So you can never get to certainty or peace from taking an action without clarifying how you want to think and feel about it.
That makes a lot of sense.
So that's really where I think we have to back up and there's a lot of different questions out there, right? Just from what you two said, like, how do you engage as an ally? How do you think about being an ally? How do you think about it when you're a member of the group that the person is talking about, right? Am I going to show up different? So I'm Jewish. Am I going to show up differently about like a neo-Nazi, right? Like, versus engaging with somebody who I'm not in personal danger from, but I want to be an ally to a group. So like, there's those questions. There's the like, you know, whether, when, how to engage, whether, when, how to draw boundaries, like all of that has to come from how you want to think and feel, right, about the interaction and your role. And I personally think, you know, paradoxically, the more that we want to persuade people, I think if we're not managing our mind, the worse a job we do of it, right? Because we get very emotionally attached to them changing their thoughts. Right. So then now we're all invested. And now it's not just about them. It's about like our ego and are we doing a good job? And did we get them to change their mind? And they shouldn't think the way they think. And then we get all heated. And then they are like they feel attacked for kind of good reason, because we're getting all heated, right? It's actually like completely the opposite. So I don't think the question is even like, oh, I know I want to change everybody's mind, right? It's like, this is the world. People have all these different opinions. How do I want to show up? Mm-hmm. And how do I want to think about how I want to show up for the things I believe in? I think that's where you have to start. And it's a more open-ended question, but it's not a flip-flop, do I block or not question. It's like a question you can actually answer and think about. You know, some people want to feel peaceful and loving, and certain actions will flow for that. Some people want to feel really energized and activated, and different actions will flow from that. Like, you have to decide what's the energetic state you want to be in, the feeling, and what thought will create that for you.
Then yeah. How do you navigate, once you've sort of clarified that thought, maybe of how you want to show up, how do you, can you give any tips on how to clarify where the, whether the actions that you're then compelled to do fit within that framework?
They'll flow naturally, right? So that's the thing. It's like, we're only back and forth. Like, think about a situation where you know very clearly, like, what you believe and what you should do, right? We all have situations where that's like very clear to us, I think, you know, where we're like, oh, this relationship has to end because XYZ happened, right? Or like, this is, I need to say something about this. Or like, you know, if you have a child and someone says something to your child that you don't think they should say, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, you can very clearly, you go into that protective mode of like, absolutely not. Let me like deal with this situation immediately. I know exactly what I want to do. And that's not saying you won't second guess it later. Like, you still have a human brain that's been socialized to do that. But I think we all have situations where we don't, or you just think about like, you know, anything in your life, no matter what example I give, some people torture themselves about it. So I could say like getting dressed or what to eat for lunch. Like, everybody has something that they, some basic thing they can't figure out how to think about what to do, but we all have things where we can. Mm-hmm. Like, I personally am fine going to sleep. I'm like, I'm tired, I'll go to sleep. This isn't a problem. I'm not confused about it. When you have figured out how you want to show up, like what you want to think and feel, your action just flows naturally from that. And so that's why, I mean, it makes for unsatisfying radio in some way, but there isn't like a one size fits all answer. Like, for some people, when they clean up the way that they're thinking and how they want to feel, it's going to turn out that they don't want to engage at all, because they think like, well, I have this much energy and I'd rather devote it to canvassing in this state. And so I'm not going to spend time on Facebook arguing with people or whatever. Right. And then some people are going to feel like, oh, actually, I think, you know, when I show up on purpose to just express what I know, I feel very capable of having a lot of these conversations, and that doesn't bother me or stress me out. And like, that's a way that I can show up and contribute. So that's what I want to do. Like, the actions are going to look different based on people's different personalities. I mean, you know, what I will say as a coach is that it is hard for someone to change their beliefs even when they want to. It is very, very difficult. You cannot change someone's beliefs for them against their will, which is what most of us are trying to do when we try to argue with people, right? Yeah. That is just extremely ineffective. And so that doesn't mean you shouldn't have those conversations, but that's why I think the much more powerful question is, how do I want to show up? When is it important for me to say something for me? Not because I'm going to change that person, not because I'm imagining the council of ally judgment deciding whether or not I did the right thing, like the angels on the cloud who issue the decision, right? Just like, how do I want to feel? When am I going to want to show up? And so like, for me, that means sometimes I do say something. I mean, I could spend all fucking day on, I don't know if I'm allowed to curse.
Yeah,
I could spend I've been on podcasts where I have to say like, my podcast is called Unfork Your Brain.
Unfrick your brain.
Yeah, asterisk your brain. I could spend all day on Facebook arguing with people about the shit they're saying that's not true. Right? I was like, that's such a waste of my time given the work I have to do in the world. So, you know,
and horrible and not fun. So fun and not fun.
I don't find it fun at all, because this is like, all I do all day is try to help people change thoughts that they even want to change, and it's still an uphill battle. So it's not that you can't. Of course, I believe we can sometimes persuade and teach and educate. That's all I do, is I try to teach people to think about their brains in a different way than they are. Of course, it's possible to change people's minds, but I don't think that kind of aggressiveness ever does that. I mean, I feel like it's like very in these days to just yell at people for being stupid and ignorant and racist, which go for it. I'm not saying that's wrong or morally bad or anything. I just don't think it's effective. Like mm-hmm. that just isn't what changes people's minds. Mm-hmm. That's just a different project. Like social ostracism and thought change are two different projects, and you can't pretend that they're ever going to go together. You have to pick which one you're trying to do.
Oof. A call out.
Okay, broads. I mean, as we're talking about in this episode, 2020 has not been an easy one. We all know that. But no matter how hard life gets, how much crap is thrown at you, it is so important to keep prioritizing your mental health. I think we're learning about that a lot in this episode. And I can speak from personal experience here, broads. If I put my mental health on the back burner, everything else in my life is affected. But finding the right help can be incredibly difficult. Well, BetterHelp is here to take away all of the stress of finding a licensed professional that works for you.
BetterHelp is the tool that you need, that I need, that we all need. Mm-hmm. If you've been thinking about seeking therapy, but you weren't sure where to start, they've made it so easy. BetterHelp assesses your specific needs and matches you with your own licensed professional therapist. They have a huge range of expertise available, so no matter what you're going through, there's going to be a match for you. You can start communicating in under 48 hours, and you'll be able to send a message to your counselor anytime from anywhere. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions with your counselor to help keep you on track.
I know a big hindrance that keeps people from seeking out mental health professionals is the cost, but BetterHelp understands that, and because no one should be without help due to finances, they've made their services way more affordable than in-person treatment and even made financial aid available. Your mental health can't wait. Seek the treatment you've been looking for today. Just so you know, broads, I recently took my first session with a professional therapist at BetterHelp. I had an amazing experience, and it's just something so many of us need right now, and I needed it, and I'm grateful for BetterHelp.
Visit betterhelp.com/broads. That's betterhelp.com/broads, and join the over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. And for all you chatty broads, you can get 10% off your first month now at betterhelp.com/broads. That's betterhelp.com/broads for 10% off.
So knowledge is power, baby. Okay. I live by that, maybe to a fault, but I want to know it all. If there's info, especially about me, I want to know about it so I can plan and act accordingly, because the more you know, the better decisions you can make going forward. And the biggest decisions I can think of are the ones surrounding your family planning. Why then are so many left in the dark when it comes to their fertility?
Well, the fact that fertility tests have traditionally cost sometimes thousands of dollars is definitely one of the reasons that comes to mind. But no more. It's 2020. It's time to normalize having affordable, easy access to all your fertility information with the help of Modern Fertility. And all it takes is a simple finger prick with their at-home test. Then you mail it back with their prepaid label, and you'll have your personalized results within 10 days. And this actually works. I've said it time and time again, but Caroline from the Bachelor, from the season I was on, she took a Modern Fertility test, was able to be made aware through that test. She just did it randomly. Yeah. She wasn't trying to conceive or anything like that. Found out that she has a very low follicle, or I'm going to say anything wrong, but everything wrong. But anyway, she ended up going to see a fertility specialist because of her Modern Fertility results, and she's now able to take proactive measures so that she can have children, biological children one day.
It doesn't matter the age, really. Like, they help so much. And like you mentioned, traditional testing can cost over $1,000 in a doctor's office. With Modern Fertility, you'll get all the information you need for only $159. After receiving the results, you'll even have the option to talk to a fertility nurse to plan out your steps, which is amazing. You have the option to actually speak one-on-one to someone. Mm-hmm. And if you want kids today, or maybe one day, or like you're talking about with Caroline, you can get all that information that you need to make the best decision for you and your family.
And right now, Modern Fertility is offering our listeners $20 off the test when you go to modernfertility.com/chatty. That means your test is only going to cost $139 instead of the hundreds or thousands it could cost at a doctor's office. So get $20 off your fertility test when you go to modernfertility.com/chatty. modernfertility.com/chatty. I do have a question pertaining to that, about sort of a specific scenario, but I've had a lot of people message us wanting to talk about this on Chatty Broads. Some version of this scenario, which is a personal one I'm dealing with right now. So maybe if you could give some ideas on how to navigate thinking about this sort of thing. I have a
personal example.
Yes, I have a new friend who just, I have a new friend. And she, you know, in the beginning of our friendship, I started seeing on social media stuff, like certain things she was liking, mm-hmm. where it's not just like subtle. It's like, oh, whoa, this is really like the opposite of my worldview. And mm-hmm. this is, in my opinion, really hateful. And then I hung, I was like, whatever, I'm going to give this person a chance. I'm going to hang out with them. I hung out with them. They actually even brought up some of those things that I'm like, oh, I don't agree. But then in my head, I'm going, I don't want to, like, is this person knows what I think because they follow me on social media. And I know that they watch what I say that's in direct opposition to the things that they believe. And so I'm like, oh, is this person, like, I'm trying, they know, they already know what I think. Should I take the time to, like, disagree with them and have this conversation? And I was like, no, I would like to have a pleasant afternoon just hanging out with this person, enjoying their company. And then my feelings after that first encounter was like, I enjoy hanging out with this person. Don't want to talk about those things with them. But then there's a part of me that feels really guilty because it's like, am I doing a bad thing by associating with this person who believes things that I think are hateful? Is that, am I just ignoring this person's huge problematic thinking? Like, am I ignoring that? And is that wrong of me to ignore that? And I've seen a lot of versions of this in DMs saying, you know, like my dad, my sister, my best friend.
A lot of people feel this conflict.
Yeah.
But again, I think we have to back up because we can't just start from the premise of, I don't want to talk about this because it'll be unpleasant. Because that's a whole set of thoughts and feelings you have about conflict or the conversation or not wanting to experience that. And so it's like, we're not starting from a clean slate.
Okay.
Right. It's like sort of, we're starting from a place of like, well, I'm going to keep all of my thoughts about conflict avoidance or not wanting to be uncomfortable or like not knowing, you know, thinking I don't know how to do a good job at it, or like I'm going to feel stressed or I'm going to feel anxious or I'm going to feel frustrated. So we're kind of starting from a place where we know we're going to be like emotionally reactive if we have the conversation. And then it's like human nature to want to avoid
that. Makes sense. Like, I think the belief that I might be holding, because I think I have this issue with friends and family, I think most women do, which is probably why you do this work, is like, if I love someone or if I'm interested in loving someone, any kind of conflict will jeopardize that loving relationship.
And you're just like, on a kind of fundamental level, you just don't want to have those feelings, right? You're like, the human, you have to, our brain is made up of these different levels that evolved over time. And we have, sure, the prefrontal cortex that understands things like principles and social justice and like, what do I believe in? And then we have the primitive kind that's like, yelling is dead. We die if people yell. So let's not do that. Right. And like those, that part of your brain is at play too. So I think we would have to back up. Like, if you were my client, I would want to coach you on all of your like avoidance of that, of quote, even calling it conflict, right? Deciding it would be a conflict, but that's a problem, that it has to feel a certain way. Like, all of that stuff has to get cleaned up first. Until you can't make a choice about whether to have that conversation until you believe that you could feel basically okay, whichever one you did. You can't make it from a place of one of these is going to be scary or upsetting or frustrating or angry or terrible, and I'm going to feel ashamed, right? Like that, or we could just have lemonade and have a nice time. Like, your brain is always going to choose, let's just have lemonade and have a nice time. Not because you're a bad person, just because you have a human brain.
Yeah.
And if your survival is not directly threatened, you're not going to want to get involved with it in the moment, because, you know, humans have evolved to really, to be extremely sensitive to social discord and rejection, especially in person, because we used to live in little hunter-gatherer tribes and you needed everybody to want to carry you around. If you were sick and couldn't, you know, put your work in, you needed everybody to like you. And women are just socialized to think that their value comes from everybody liking them and getting along with everybody and being nice and supportive. So that's like this big uphill battle. Your brain's never in the moment gonna choose to go up that hill.
Yeah.
Until you've done the work to like feel neutral would be the goal, but even to feel kind of like, okay, I know that if I do have the conversation, you know, I do a lot of work of teaching women how to process their emotions in ways that so they aren't as overwhelming. So it would be like, my goal for somebody would eventually be to get to a point where they're like, I'll feel the same. Like, I'll feel totally neutral if I have the conversation with her. It won't ruin my afternoon. I won't have negative emotions about it. Mm-hmm. But even before we could get there, just getting to the place of like, okay, well, like, I might find it scary to talk about this. What's going to happen is like, my face is going to feel hot and my brain's going to tell me I'm an asshole. And like, that's okay. That doesn't mean those things are true. Like, being able to talk themselves to a place of at least willingness. And then you can, from that place, you're really deciding from a clean place.
Yeah.
Whether or not to have the conversation.
Or maybe addressing the fear, which I have, and I'm sure many other people have, the root fear that maybe this person won't want to be around me ever again.
Yeah.
And I don't want that. So I want to do things to avoid this person feeling like they never want to see me again.
Yeah. And, like, but you also, and then there's so much work embedded in that, right? Because why is that a problem? You have to make sure that it's all that you, there's all of this kind of self-worth stuff under that, right? Of like, because the truth is nobody's company is like so incredible that without any like ego or mean self-talk wrapped up in it, we just can't live without it, right? Like, so there's like stuff. Yeah. I mean, I've been going through this. I do a lot of this work on myself. I do all my work on myself, obviously, also. But I've been going through this a lot in dating, right? It's like you'll, me or my clients, you'll meet someone, you'll have hung out with them like a few times, right? I mean, your brain all of a sudden acts like, you will literally die if you can't spend time with this person again, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you were fine until a week ago. You'd never even met them before, right? Like, as you've had 17 other boyfriends in your life. Obviously, there's other ones, but your brain is like, nope, we'll die. We will die. Anything is horrible to not seeing this person again.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense, right? Like, what's under that is like all your thoughts about, in that case, your dating life, or whether you're good enough, or whether you're attractive enough, or weird. So there's, it's like, this is why when you start, it's like Pandora's box, right? There's like, so, and this is why we can't just go with like, yes, the rule is you should always have the conversation, or no, the rule is you should never have the conversation, or like, it's like, we have to unpack so much stuff that goes into it.
So if you, if you have no issue having that certain type of discord or conflict or whatever you want to call it with like a partner or family member, is that because there's like maybe a feeling of inherent security in that relationship? Like, you're not worried about it being jeopardized? Because we've sort of pondered this before.
Security with yourself. You can never have a total, I mean, most people, you know, maybe for some people their parents, but like, and maybe for some people their partner, but truthfully, right, you can't ever, you can't count on anybody else ever to 100% for sure never leave you, no matter. Right. So, yeah, I think like day to day, practically speaking, yes, it's like some relationships feel safe enough to express disagreement and the people have, you know, good processing and communication skills. And so it feels possible to do that.
Right, 'cause it's like I express disagreement with my dad or my boyfriend all the fucking time, you know? I'm like, fuck yeah. You know, like, right, no problem.
You you feel secure there. But it's also that feeling of security with yourself. And I think different people, there's different categories or types of relationships or types of discussions that tend to send up the flare for them. So like, you might feel very secure in your romantic relationships, but then in friendships, you have these thoughts about like, well, what is this person going to think? Or I don't want to like lose their friendship or whatever.
Totally. See, that romantic or familial, I have no problems. See,
that's so, car, this is, oh, you always blow my mind.
I have that issue with all my friends. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think you do too. We're something I think that we inherently were maybe even drawn to each other at the get-go before we knew each other, before the podcast even started. And maybe we just could smell it on the other person. We're like that with romantic. Like, I've never had a problem, even if I was casually dating guy, to just be like, well, this is what I think, and just go off.
But
no problem. But with my, specifically my female friendships, I'm so insecure and I'm like, I need you to like me. Like, and there's that.
Even friendships for me that have been around decades.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I'm the really opposite. Scary. I have to do the work in my romantic life more. Okay. And in my friendships, I'm like, I feel, it's not just that I feel secure in them. I also am like, if somebody doesn't want to be friends with me because of X, Y, Z, like, fine. Then, you know, they're lost. No problem. That's
devastating for me.
Right. Exactly. Right. So it's like, you start, this is why, right? We can't be like, oh, here's the rule about whether or not the conversation or not. It's like, each question like that is an opening into, oh, I have this whole thought pattern about friendship that has to do with all these thoughts about myself. Like, I got to clean up all that shit before I'm ever going to know whether to like have the conversation or not.
Could you break down why like, possibly, obviously, it might be a lot of generalizing, but why maybe some people would have insecurity with themselves in relation to friendships versus family versus romantic? Because, like, why might we feel confident or secure in ourselves or insecure in certain other areas?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's like that old nature versus nurture question. It's probably a combination of different things. Like, I think for me, why not tell all your family's business on national?
Hey, this is what we do about with ourselves.
Let me try to say this slightly diplomatically. I think maybe it depends on what's modeled for you in some ways. Mm-hmm. My parents always had, they always had a lot of separate friends and they had very long-term friendships. Like what I saw and learned about friendship. I see like light bulbs going off over.
Yeah, no, my brain is on fire right now.
Yeah.
Do I think it's all that? Who knows? There's like so much social messaging. You're probably some of your, you know, maybe your formative experiences as a child. Like in coaching, I don't spend a ton of time on like, why are you this way? Because I just think it's more important. You know, I think the premise sometimes of talk therapy is like, well, once you get that insight about why you're this way, it'll all change.
Sometimes it's like, well, then now what the fuck?
Yeah, well, that's what coaching is for, right? That's what I felt like. Like when I got left for therapy, I was like, great, now we know exactly why I'm like going after these emotionally unavailable men. So should I just text you every time I do it? Or watch me keep doing it? Like, what's the rehab plan here? Like you went to the doctor and they were like, man, your meniscus is torn. Yeah, that's fucked up. That's why you can't walk. And then they were like, all right, see you next week. Like, are we going to repair it? Or like, is there surgery? Like, what are we going to do?
You can help me out over here.
That's what coaching. Yeah. They're like, here are your crutches. Good luck. Like that, to me, that's what coaching is about, is like changing those thought patterns. But I do think it can be helpful sometimes to like seeing the etiology or like what caused the pattern can be helpful to just get you that little bit of distance of like, oh, this isn't just objective reality.
Yes.
Like this, I see how maybe I learned this and it's not the only way to think about things.
Right. Maybe I didn't feel, maybe I wouldn't have felt this way had this not happened. I think there's something that might be a little freeing about that.
Poor me, I'm a victim now way, because we're all going to get patterned, right? What is that? That's the thing about being a parent. It's like your kid's going to end up in therapy no matter what you do.
Sure.
Like,
of course.
Right? It's just, it's not like one's better than the other. It's just seeing it, seeing where it comes from, I think sometimes help you see like there's other ways I could be or think about this. This is not just something like,
that's inherently wrong with me.
Yeah, and it's not like the only possible reality. Like there's another way to think.
Right. It's that, it's that understanding of like, oh, okay, I'm not just like, I'm not a freak because I am so insecure about my relationships and my friendships with other women. It's like, oh, when you're talking about that, I'm like, oh, yeah. Both my parents coming from a very conservative home, it was very much like you're yoked together. They didn't really have any friends except each other. There was this major just so then any other friendship could be competitive because there was weird affair. Mm-hmm. Like it was just a whole thing. So it's like, oh, this is all, this kind of makes sense.
All making sense.
It makes me feel a little settled.
Yeah. And I saw friendships just fall through like on my mom's end.
Yeah.
Like just people who maybe wasn't even her fault. People who like abandoned her, ghosted her, whatever, who were like her close friends, people who were.
Or there'd be a disagreement coming to maybe a scriptural disagreement or something church-wise where you'd see it. Then they're like, well,
that never happened in my house. Yeah. Scriptural disagreement with a friend.
Or even just the dissolvement of a friendship, which maybe it wasn't, maybe it just was something that had to be, but maybe the way that I saw it growing up was just like, oh my God, friendships could end at any minute. They're fragile and like they're not forever. And
yeah, sometimes there's nothing even pathological going on. It's just you're a kid. You don't understand everything. Like things hit you in a certain way or you're just at a certain age and something like sticks with you. You know, it's like, who knows? And then just all your, you know, and then as you have a thought pattern, you create more and more evidence for it, right? So you like keep acting it out and then it seems more and more true, right? So if you're like, if your thing is about relationships, then you keep dating emotionally unavailable people or going after people who aren't interested in you. So you prove to yourself more and more that that's unstable. And if your thing is about friendships, you do that with friends, right? And so then by the time you're 20, 30, 40, you're like, well, I have so much evidence that this is the case, right? It's just that you've created it all. You got, it's like there's all that stuff to clean up before you decide who you want to be friends with and why, right? Because it's like that question can't just go, we can't just like assume that we, you know, that's I think the big thing about thought work is we're never, we can't, your brain, the way your brain will pose a question to you is like usually wrong, right? Usually like takes for granted a bunch of beliefs that maybe aren't true. There's all these assumptions baked into it. It's like you have to unpack all of that stuff. Like, well, why do I want to be friends with this person? What would I think if the friendship didn't work out? Mm. Oh, turns out I'd think, see, you can never keep friends. There's something wrong with you. Okay, well, now we're not talking about a neutral playing field for me to make this decision, because this is what I'm telling myself will happen if the person has a certain thought about me. So now, of course, I'm not motivated to lean into that. Now I got to clean all that up. And then I would be able to know.
What would that look like? Can you imagine feeling secure in yourself when it comes to relating to people and friends? Wow.
But you guys, but here's the amazing thing though. You guys are both able to do that in your relationships. And so you can extrapolate. Like, that's something to practice doing, is to practice like calling up the and looking at the thoughts. I would like write down like, what are all the thoughts that keep you feeling? Why do you feel so secure seeing your husband or fiance or boyfriend? Like, fuck you, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. You're being racist right now. Like, why? Right? Like, why does that feel okay? Just because of a thought you have about it. It's not, that's the thing. It's not because of some like generalized security that's really out there. Like, that's not, it's just thoughts. So like, you can look at like, what are the thoughts that I unintentionally, but get a practice and get a great result from in my relationship all the time. And like, these are the things that I would want to believe about my friendships. Mm-hmm. Right? And what does it feel like when I'm thinking those thoughts? Okay, that's the feeling I want to create in my friendships. Like, you have the, it's like you've made the sample, and now we just have to like do it in a different pattern.
Yes. I mean, because I can think about all these times where I've had arguments and makeups and conflict resolution all the time with partners, so much so that it's automatic. But Jess, can you think about how many times you've had true like conflict or fights with friends, and then it's just 30 minutes later been like, I'm really sorry. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on. And it hasn't been awkward the next time you haven't made it awkward the next time you've hung out, or like,
no, it's typically like either I never say anything and it just like builds up and grinds and grinds, or it becomes this huge thing where then it's like an explosive thing. And then it's a whole drama after, but it's like, yeah, just doing some of this thought work. It's like, okay, I'm thinking, okay, like, look, think about my patterns with my significant other or partners that I've had in the past. And it's like, oh, some of my insecurities are so deep in female relationship, because I'm like, I want you to like me so badly. And there's maybe something about partners, and maybe it's related to sex, that maybe sometimes I put my piece of security in that sometimes too heavily. Like, maybe, I don't know if it's too heavily.
Sexual attraction. Yeah.
But it's kind of like, you know, I'm secure with my DAP, my dry ass pussy, because she's not wet very often.
Same.
But she needs lube. Right? In an area where you feel secure, relationships can end and you're like, all right, I'll find a new boyfriend.
Yeah, and it's a little bit like, oh, okay. But yeah.
Like you're not sad or upset, but no, you don't immediately go to this place of like the same place you go when a friendship thing happens. Right?
Yes.
It's like the belief matters so much more than what the actual facts of the scenario are.
Yes.
Right. I've always said in dating, it's like, oh, take me or leave me. Like, you're missing out then if you don't want to date me. But with a friendship, I'm like, take me or take me, please. Or I'm going to die. Like you said, or I'm going to die.
Right. So it's like, how can you bring that attitude of take me or leave me? Yeah. To your friendships where you're like, this is who I am. This is what I believe in. This is what I stand for. This is how I like to eat my salads. Like, whatever. Right? This is just who I am. Mm-hmm. Right. Take it or leave it. Mm. That's the work. But it's amazing when you've already done it in one area, because you can start to get your brain just bit by bit, like kind of, I actually like to think of it almost as like, I'm like, it's like a side to side movement in my brain. I'm like
osmosis. Okay. Like, yeah.
Feels here. I know nobody can, if you're listening to this, you can't see me, but I'm like, okay, I like get into that state here. I like think those thoughts. I'm like, all right, this is how it feels. And now I'm like, okay, we're going to move it over here. And then I just try to like emotionally.
I don't like that
sound. Yeah. I just try to like, it doesn't last. It's just a microsecond. Right. But it's almost like you can trick your brain into like keeping that emotional state, and then being like, okay, what if we thought that about friends? And then like you get it for a second and then it's gone. And you just keep practicing.
Where do you start with people if they don't have anything that they can pull from, you know, like what if they feel insecure in themselves in all types of relationships with other people?
I mean, if you dig deep enough, this is what's so interesting about the ego. Even when you're super mean to yourself, you ask, my experience is if you ask most people, even who hate themselves, if they would want to be someone else specific and have that person's like brain, not just their life, like not like, do you want to live in their amazing house and have their handsome husband?
Right.
You want, like, sure. Yeah. Sign me up. That sounds good. I like yachts, but like, do you, would you want to, like, if you had to lose your own consciousness, right? Like your own idea of being yourself, your own experience of it, and just have somebody else's consciousness. Almost everybody will say no.
Mm-hmm. Too risky.
Even when they don't like themselves. It's just too weird, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, there is actually something in you that you identify with that you want to keep. Mm. So sometimes I start there. Most people can find some area. I'm like, I mean, sometimes I'll just be like, do you feel like confident that you can get out of bed and get dressed in the morning? Most people do. Like most people have some, you know, most of us are getting through the day somewhat. If you're like completely non-functional, then coaching is not the first modality you should be dealing with. Like that's time for a different kind of mental health professional help. But a lot of people are like pretty insecure in a lot of most areas of their lives. And so at that point I do a lot of, we might have talked about this on the first episode I was on. So if people, sorry to repeat it, if so, but I focus a lot on neutral baby step thoughts. To like, so what we've been talking about is actually kind of a high level thing where you're like, oh, I already have this strong set of thoughts and feelings in this area. And I'm going to try to like, see if I can just kind of migrate them over. It's like a lateral move. But instead, if you don't have that, you got to like start building up a vertical ladder very, very slowly. And you can do both. They're not, these aren't at odds, these techniques. You can do both of them. And, you know, I would probably, I would do both if I was trying to work on a new area. I would both be like, okay, here's the goal. I want to feel like as good in this area as I do in this one. And I see how, what that might be like, but now how am I going to build my way there? So you start with like very basic little thoughts. Like, and sometimes it's really as basic as like, I'm willing to believe that what my brain is saying to me might not be 100% true. You know, or like, I'm willing to believe that my brain is not completely reliable about what's happening right now. Anywhere from that to like practicing intermediate thoughts, like with body image, which I do a lot of work on, is a place neutral thoughts are really helpful. And so for instance, if your thought is like, my stomach is disgusting and I hate it, right? Going straight to like, I'm a beautiful, glorious goddess, which is like what positive affirmations tell you to do, doesn't work for 99.99% of people. I'm being generous and assuming the people teaching it did work for, although maybe it's just bullshit. So I'll teach like, practice something like, this is a human stomach. Many people have stomachs that look like this. A stomach is not the only indicator of my worth. It's possible there are attractive parts of me, even though I have the stomach. Like it's this, I always say like a good neutral thought would not be a good like Pinterest or Instagram inspirational quote. Like don't, you're not, you wouldn't put it on a beach background and get 800 likes. On Instagram. Like it should be non-inspirational, something you actually believe and practice.
All so older people like, get wrinkles.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. So like you'd have to figure out whatever your thought about friends are. Like, you know, if somebody doesn't want to be my friend, it means XYZ about me. And then we would practice something very neutral, like it's possible that this person isn't the ultimate judge of whether I'm XYZ, or like it's possible that, you know, my worth doesn't depend on what this person I met 2 weeks ago thinks, or you know, like just a little bit.
Not all friendships are meant to last forever, that kind of thing.
Not all friendships are meant to last forever. Yeah, I mean, I think that is not going to be super helpful when the problem is
our brain's like, yes, let's try that.
Yeah, I'm like, I think you've tried that already and it hasn't helped, but here's why.
It's so true. Good point. That was my first thought about a neutral thought. It's like, yeah, maybe those are the neutral thoughts that are cycling a little bit too much in my brain.
Yeah, but I don't think it's, yeah, but it's not helping. Here's why. Because you're, what you really have is a two-part, like, so is this actually a great example to dissect? Because this is what happens a lot when people try to come up with neutral thoughts. They try to pick something that like makes it okay that the bad thing is happening without questioning whether it's a bad thing, right? So it's sort of like, I call it like a silver lining, where it's like, oh, it's raining, but the silver lining is. So in your case, like your problem isn't that some friendships don't last forever. Your problem is what you make it mean when a friendship doesn't last forever about yourself.
Right.
So telling yourself that lots of friendships ends, your brain's like, yeah, because you fucking suck. That's right. Why end. So like that doesn't solve your problem, right? So you
gotta, because like, arguments happen. That's why friendships don't last forever. Because if you get an argument, the friendship will
and
be over.
There's something wrong with you and bad. So of course some friendships would end. So like we need to go to the, you need to look at like, what you're making it mean about yourself. And that's where you need a neutral thought.
Well, broads, summer is winding down, which sounds insane because it's currently 110 degrees in Los Angeles and I'm 25 seconds away from melting into a puddle. But trust me, before you know it, we will be swapping our bathing suits for sweaters and our flip-flops for boots. Mm-hmm. And aside from sweaters and boots, nothing screams fall uniform to me personally more than classic fine jewelry pieces from one of my favorite brands, Mejuri.
Don't let the label fine jewelry turn you off either, because Mejuri is changing the landscape, making fine jewelry that works for every day. It's handcrafted, it's ethically sourced, and here's a big one, broads, it's fairly priced. Think 14K gold hoop earrings, personalized necklaces, stackable rings that won't turn your fingers green no matter how long you keep them on for, all affordable.
Ugh, it's the gorgeous jewelry that is high quality and ethically sourced for an affordable and reasonable price for me, babe, okay? So at Mejuri, everything is made with the highest quality material so the green fingers don't happen and the pieces are designed to last.
And they're so cute.
And they're so cute! I swear I never take my Mejuri pieces off. They live on me day after day and they still look as good as the day I bought them. I'm wearing earrings right now and rings right now from Mejuri. Currently, I wear them every single day. I wear them in the shower. I never take them off. They are still in the best condition. I'm so impressed by the durability and the quality.
I love all of their designs. I'm surprisingly not wearing my Mejuri today, but I am almost every day. They have really cute little zodiac.
I have my little zodiac earrings on. They're so cute. You just have to go online and check out. You'll browse for hours. Trust and believe.
Mm-hmm. And we may be going nowhere, but we're definitely getting dressed and looking good in our homes.
Yes.
Some of us, at least us.
We're trying.
Us, look at us. Look, and you can feel your best with fine jewelry that's made to last. Get free shipping on all U.S. and Canadian orders, plus easy returns and a 2-year warranty. Just visit Mejuri.com/chatty and use promo code chatty10 for 10% off your order. That is Mejuri.com/chatty and use promo code Chatty10 for 10% off your order.
Well, broads, for the last few months, I've been on the hunt for a good protein powder to add into my daily routine. Unfortunately, I'm pretty skeptical because I've been burned by many protein powders in the past because they taste horrible. Or when I check the ingredients, the supposed clean or organic powders are full of ingredients that I've never seen or I don't understand. But then I decided to try Truvani simply because of the overwhelming amount of 5-star reviews I saw online. And let me tell you, broads, Truvani did not disappoint me.
Well, I prefer to eat plant-based as much as possible, which means finding a protein powder isn't easy. Most contain dairy, whey, and at the very least are full of really weird ingredients that sound like creatures in a sci-fi movie. They're not ingredients I want going into my body. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons I love Truvani. None of the crap. Their vanilla and chocolate protein powders have less than 6 ingredients each, simple, and they're ingredients you can pronounce and recognize. There's no fillers or quote-unquote natural ingredients. It's even USDA organic and vegan certified.
You had me at the word chocolate.
Mm.
Ugh. And if you're flooded with memories of chalky, faux chocolate flavored protein powders of the past, like I was, I can promise you,
not like that.
Truvani tastes nothing like those. It is delicious. I like to add mine to my morning smoothie because it's the easiest way to pile on 20 grams of protein first thing in the morning. Plus the fact that it tastes like dessert doesn't hurt. But because Truvani is so quality and so clean with those 6 ingredients or less, I like to just add it to my oatmeal in the morning. As well. Ooh. Or my new favorite trick is baking with Truvani. I've been making these bliss balls with Truvani and oh my god, it is so good. And if you actually go on Truvani's website, they have a whole page dedicated to recipes you can make with their protein powders, including golden milk brownies. I mean,
wow. I've not taken it. I will be.
You better, because it's delish.
Love it.
You will not regret.
Truvani has a special opportunity for all you broads, too. You can get a protein powder gift pack, including a full-size bag in your choice of flavors for a full 50% off, half off, plus extra free gifts from Truvani, including an amazing glass straw. Hello, sustainable broads.
Mm-hmm.
This is a $99 value now, and you can get yours for just $29.99. To get the full protein powder gift pack for just $29.99 plus free gifts, text Chatty to 64,000. You do not want to miss out on this amazing offer from Truvani. You just have to text Chatty to 64,000 today.
That's 64,000 today.
Okay. So moving backwards from that kind of thought of like not all friendships last forever.
Well, so like tell me why it's a problem if someone doesn't want to be your friend. What does it mean about you?
I'll say it about me.
Go for it. I'll probably feel the same way.
To me, what it means is that often for me, it means that I'm not an overall like good person.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I break it down into my insecurity is that you like me initially. Everybody likes me initially, but then you get to know me and I disappoint you.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay, so then we need a thought that goes to that.
Sad. It's unfortunate that it's true. No, I'm just kidding.
She's like, actually, I've been meaning to tell you.
We've been meaning to talk about this.
Podcast is
you're
over
deeply disappointing.
And I'm not into it. I'm deeply disappointed in you.
Cara just broke us up.
Yeah, she's like, this is like as good a time as any to let you know. Feel the same way.
No, but it's very often like I'm very aware of my, and I'll put them in quotations, flaws.
Yeah.
I'm very aware of my quotes, flaws. And I'm like, how many air quotes can I put around flaws? But I'm
disappointing though is an interesting specific word to use. Like,
yes, that's very,
what do you mean by that?
I feel like people think that I'm going to be someone who,
like, you're not as fun or like,
no, I think I feel pretty confident that I'm a good time. It's the more intimate friendship piece that throws me off, that I feel like people think I'm going to be able to handle a lot of their emotions and their needs. And I have actually, in my opinion, maybe a smaller backpack. I can only handle so much emotional baggage from someone because I'm processing my own and my own mental health. And so then often I feel like I disappoint people because they think I'm going to be that friend.
A shoulder to cry on.
And I like to be a shoulder to cry on sometimes, but who's there anytime they need to call at 3 a.m. and is always down to like show up.
And this is such a beautiful example.
Okay, good.
If somebody on the bus was like, hey, you look like you should hear my life story and solve all my problems.
And that's what happens to me, Cara.
Yeah, welcome to the club. How do you think I show up for that example?
You're like, welcome to my work.
She's
every single
be that
day
bitch that gets stuck in the corner with that person talking about their parents' divorce.
If your thoughts cause your feelings, what causes other people's feelings?
Their thoughts.
Wait, say that again. If your thoughts cause
if your thoughts cause your feelings, what causes other people's feelings?
Their thoughts.
Their thoughts.
Their thoughts. Yeah. Right. Their thoughts cause their feelings. Your thoughts cause your feelings. Two completely separate processes happening, two different machines running, right?
Right.
So when you are afraid someone will be disappointed, you're afraid that they're going to have a thought and a feeling, neither of which you cause, right?
Yeah.
But also, you don't want them to call you at 3 a.m., do you?
No, I do not. I'd like to sleep.
Right, but so then why is it a problem that they might feel disappointed? The only problem is that you make that mean I'm a bad person, right? Often when we try to coach ourselves, we try to convince ourselves that other people won't have those thoughts about us. Mm-hmm. That's not effective because they might.
Mm-hmm.
Someone totally might be like, I heard you call Jess at 3 a.m. So I want to be friends with her because I have a lot of 3 a.m. phone calls to make. And then they find out that they can't call you at 3 a.m. They might feel disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a problem until you decide that the correct response to that in your brain is, oh, it means I'm a bad person.
Mm. Yeah.
As opposed to like, what the fuck? Why would you think you could call me at 3 a.m.? We just met last week. Like, no, thank you. Right. Or whatever. Right. The only problem is that you make that about your worth as a person. So what you would want to do, I think, is practice thoughts that have that go to that. Right. Mm-hmm. Like my worth as a person can't be determined by what other people decide they make up in their own brains they want from me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, what if somebody's like, listen, if you don't give me your child and your dog, that's what I want. I am personally disappointed that you will not send Boris to live with me. I'm obsessed.
And you know what? You know how much work I have to do, Cara, is that if you ask me enough times, I'd be like, maybe I should be sending Boris over to Cara.
Right.
Maybe so that's like what she needs. So that's the right thing.
Right. So you have no boundaries there, right? Like, correct. You don't believe that you have the right to exist. or to have ownership of your own time or energy, or even pets, apparently. So this is like deep work, right? Mm-hmm. This is why when coaching starts, when you start doing this work, you can feel a little bit like you're like, I just thought I had this tiny problem with people who want to call me at 3 a.m. And now it turns out I don't even think I deserve my dog. But like when you dig into this work, like that is the core of it, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That work. So, you know, most women, I would say basically every coaching in the whole world goes back to people's worth. I mean, it's just, it's all like the end of every coaching session is basically like, well, this is, we still work on the specific things, but this is what everybody struggles with, right? Is feeling unworthy, mm-hmm. feeling not good enough, feeling ashamed of themselves. And that's mm-hmm. what all the work is about. So that's not a problem. That just means, you know, you have to decide what you want to think about your worth and what determines it, right? It doesn't make any sense to be like, whoever I happen to talk to gets to decide what I have to give them in order to prove my worth. Like,
so that they don't feel disappointed.
Right? Yeah. What a crazy system. Yeah. Somebody was like, well, I want your child. And somebody else was like, well, I want to have sex with you here on the street. And somebody else was like, you should shave your head and give me your hair. Like, people could come up with anything. You can't base your worth on that.
That's true.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. I like to think of worth as we're just born. Either we all have it the same or none of us have it at all. It's all made up. It's just a human concept. But if it's going to be one of those, I'm going with we all have the same. We're born with it. Hmm. Can't do anything about it.
I guess that's sort of an issue that that you might need to process through if you don't maybe fundamentally believe that about other people. Like maybe I actually don't believe that everyone has equal worth.
Yeah, but that's because you don't believe you have equal worth. It's really all coming from our own beliefs about ourselves. Equal worth doesn't mean like you want everybody to be your best friend or they should all be president, right? But like we do think, I mean, like, why do we think it's okay if you murder someone in the woods and no one ever finds out, even if they don't have any friends or family? No, right? Mm-hmm. We just think there's something inherent. Most of us think there's something inherent. You're not supposed to murder people, even if no one would care. Mm-hmm. You're just not, we're just not going to do that, right?
They were a really bad person. See, maybe that's coming back to my feeling the self-worth. Maybe I'm scared that I'm a really bad person.
Yeah.
Because maybe I'm like, yeah, because my initial thought was like, well, maybe if that person was like a pedophile rapist, like then kill them in the forest. We're better off without them. Like that's kind of where my mind goes. Yeah, but then you're going to
like their actions, right? And we want to like, then there's a whole reason, right? Do we think, for instance, that we should just, I think we have to separate, like, this is where people get conflated, is just separate actions from intrinsic worth. Because the problem is your brain doesn't know the difference between rape, pedophilia impacts your intrinsic worth and like whether you're going to give that answer that person's phone call. Like once you decide that people's actions can change their intrinsic worth, in my experience, that's just a slippery slope in your brain. Mm. Like your brain does not
make sense.
Your brain doesn't have the capacity to be like, okay, only in those extreme categories, but I totally won't ever question whether my actions change my intrinsic worth. Right. I find you just like, you got to go with like, we for sure might be like, some people should be in jail or some people should not, you know, be out and about because of the way that they act. But that's different, you know, that's different from their intrinsic worth. And I don't think any of what I'm saying is like, this is the truth from God. I think we all get to choose what to think. But this is what I find works for me. Like, basically, I think as soon as you make your worth dependent on how you act, it's just a never-ending process of negotiation and self-flagellation and beating yourself up and stress. It's just like such a waste of time and energy.
Hmm.
And it actually makes it harder to change your actions because you've made them so weighty.
Hmm. So any misstep is then a reflection of whether or not you're like a good person or bad person. And so then every single thing you're going to be hung up on, like,
And you're just going to like try and give up all of that. When you're like, if you can believe you're worthy no matter what, it becomes much easier to change your behavior if you want to. And you're actually much nicer to other people because you're not constantly feeling unworthy and like vigilant to see if anybody else has noticed that you're unworthy.
Because then that does become sort of an ego-centered battle, right? Yeah, it becomes all about you. All about you.
This is the big misconception, is that loving yourself would make you arrogant. I'm like, you know who's really self-involved? People who hate themselves. That's who spends all their time thinking about themselves.
Obsessing over it, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because if you
love yourself, you just don't. It's like when you love a partner or a pet. Like when you think about them, you're like, oh, I feel good. But you're not constantly obsessing over every little, you know. mm-hmm. things they do. I mean, I take a lot of pictures of my cat, but like, it doesn't keep me up at night.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So this went deep, but to circle back, that's what I would be practicing for you. Is like, you have this thought that other people, that your worth is impacted mm-hmm. by whether other people get what they want from you, which they're just totally allowed to make up whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a crazy system. That's like the Giving Tree, right? That's why that's a terrible book for girls to read. Like, the kid shows up and he's like, I want apples, I want wood, I want this. And then she's like, okay, I'll just cut everything off of me and give it to
you. I know, it's so sad. I read this book the other day
and I was like, this is the most depressing book I've ever read in my entire life.
That's what you're doing, right? You're like, whatever somebody else randomly decides they want from me, if I don't give it to them,
oh my God, I'm a bad person. I'm giving training myself. So I'm just a stump. And then I'm grateful that someone will sit on me.
Yeah, you're born with it. You're born with your worth. I don't think anything can change that. Hmm. It makes life a lot easier if you just work on believing that.
And it does. I mean, I can just imagine how then that would impact, circling back to what we were talking about just at the very beginning of this, that like, I'm thinking about the conversations with family and friends, for instance, with certain things going on, like with my friend having this conversation about systemic racism. It's something that I believe passionately that needs to be spoken about, but I'm so concerned with how other people are viewing me and disappointing someone, that I do one of two things. And that's either avoid the conversation, or that is attack that person in a conversation because another friend thinks that's what I should be doing and standing up.
Neither one feels good.
And neither one feels right to me. Yeah. And if I feel like I had the, like, I know when you're talking about like knowing, it's like, I know that I could have a conversation with this person and that I have the capability of being calm, expressing what I've learned recently, and just having an open conversation. Obviously, I can't control how the friend's going to react, but I know that I could. But this need to not disappoint people has me react kind of in one extreme or the other.
Well, right. You're like, I don't want to disappoint them. I don't want them to be mad at me. Or I don't want to disappoint the other person I'm imagining was mad at me.
Humanity.
Humanity, yeah.
Right. So it's like, but it's totally different when you show up like, this is something that's important to me, so I'm going to speak on it to be in integrity with myself.
Yes.
Right? Yes. And like, it may not be the way other people think I should do it. And some people will say, you guys know your public personas, right? Some people people think I'm way too loud and feminist, and people think I'm way too conservative and not feminist. And not, you know, it's like, there's going to be a million opinions, right?
Yes.
It's like, you can never please them all.
Literally impossible.
But if you try, mm-hmm, right? But mm-hmm. So all you can do is show up and be like, here's what I believe and here's what I'm going to share.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to speak on this because it's important. And the truth is, like, that's the least ego-full thing to do, right? Like, it's ego-driven when you're either like reacting defensively to someone having a different opinion from you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that is like, your ego and brain cognitive dissonance can't tolerate that. That's ego.
Right.
Or when you're doing it to try to like prove to yourself that you're a good person. Neither of those things necessarily are actually good for the cause.
Right. And it seems like it would then allow, because there wouldn't be the dissonance there and like the loud noise, it would allow for then someone else to step in and offer new knowledge that I could be like, I'm hearing this and I'm seeing this for what you're like the knowledge that you're bringing, and I'm able to hear from it and grow depending on, you know, if that, like, because I'm thinking from the perspective of maybe, you know, myself numerous years ago, where I wouldn't allow myself to think certain things that I believe in passionately now, because I'd be like, no, it's wrong, I can't think about that. But when you're silencing that dissonance, I would imagine that it allows the opportunity then to be able to actually see what's really going on around and actually grow.
We actually have a conversation.
Yes.
I wanted to comment though, because I did feel, I was thinking about it and I was like, maybe we make a value judgment too much about like calm. Like, if we're not being calm during the conversation, then that's like somehow wrong, or we're not doing the conversation
right. I don't think it's wrong or bad. I just think it's ineffective in terms of changing someone else's mind if that's what you're actually trying to do.
Sure. I was just thinking about when we were talking about like, how can we shift things over from relationships? And I was thinking how like we can easily have with our partners a conversation. We're like, that's not true. What you're saying is not true. Right. Like, and that kind of conversation we would feel really uncomfortable having with a friend. And it's like, we feel like that automatic value judgment in our mind is like, that's the wrong way to have a converse, like a right conversation.
When sorry, I misunderstood. Yeah, I think
you know what I mean? Like we're making it like that, the right way to be, to talk with a friend is like to be very calm and to be like, yes, like, and now right, what like, do you have to say?
Any conflict or any like real emotion.
Right, which might not be being true to who we are in terms of like how we might talk to a family member or partner and being like, you're not listening to me. This is what I just said. And like, blah, 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 blah. And like having that very sort of honest dialogue that we could have very freely with in a dynamic we feel confident in, you know?
Yeah, and it's definitely not about like tone policing how people should talk about things. There's a right way, right? It's just, I think it's like, again, it's almost like how loud your voice is or whatever else. That's almost like kind of that action again. I'm always just like, let's back up. How are you thinking and feeling going into this, right? Is your mind in a place of like, I feel passionately about this. So yeah, maybe my voice is going to get louder at some point, or I'm going to whatever, like maybe I'm going to cry because I have a lot of feelings, like whatever it is, like, but I'm showing up not because I am resisting that you have a different opinion, not because I am ego invested in you changing it or in me yelling at you to prove I'm a good person. Like,
right.
I am. How can you show up in a way? Yeah. It's like less about being calm, I think, even, and more, it's just about being like grounded in you, right? It's like, I'm in my lane.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to show up and like, I'm rooted in my lane and what I want to share or communicate here, which I cannot control the receiving of it. You may hear it. You may not. Maybe I will vary my rhetorical approach or tone or whatever if I think that's useful, whatever. Sure. Like there's a lot of different ways to have conversations, but like it's really about being in your like own lane. Like it feels very emotionally and energetically different when you are in that place. And when you are unmoored from your own grounding and you're being like dragged around the room by the other person's thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
Like, when you're allowing yourself to be that.
And it's so true. You like, and you feel it so deeply.
It's physical. It's an emotion that's created physical. By your thoughts.
Yeah. I remember it was maybe about a year ago now, but I had a interaction with a family member and it was something that I feel so strongly about and I know is right for me and I deeply believe in. And in this conversation, my voice raised and I started crying because I felt so passionate about it. And I was just letting out certain grief that I had. That family member took my quote unquote meltdown as basically a way to disregard my opinion in the matter. And I walked
away. Look at you getting so emotional.
Right.
That it's you're hysterical.
You know, Jessica's always a mess. She's emotional, whatever. It's like, you negate my point. But in that moment, I walked away, even though I knew that that person felt that way. And I still felt good and confident in what I had stated. And I didn't regret my actions because I was like, no, I was in my being and I feel deeply about what I like, the things that I said and the way that my body literally reacted to how I felt and me almost grieving and mourning certain things. And I felt good about it, even though the person I know disregarded what I said. And that was, and it's so funny that we're talking about this because that was that moment that has stuck out in my head as like this really cathartic moment where I felt like I was really in my own body.
Yeah, because
you're being like confident and authentic.
I always go back to that.
It doesn't matter, right? It's like you can have the hardest relationship conversation. You can say whatever and you just know, like you are just showing up to tell your truth. And ideally, depending on the situation, to actually hear what the other person is saying. You know, when we go in being like, I'm right, you're wrong. You know, we just, I mean, especially these like very polarized conversations, everybody's read all the things on the internet. Nobody is like, you are not like coming in with some fact that you're not like, actually, it's sodium chloride. And they're like, oh my God, I know the other one. This is all resolved now, right? Like, there's so much going on there that it's not about, like, I think, you know, and that when you're in your, I think also when you do your own work, then you know that like you have a different agenda for different conversations. Like, sometimes you're like, oh, I think, you know, I want to understand where this person is coming from. Like, I feel like in dating, I'm often like, okay, this person's a very different opinion than I do. I want to understand what their rationale is. Like, if I'm choosing someone to be a friend or an intimate partner. Like, I want to see what the values are behind this. And if like I can, there's enough overlap that even though it like our rationales aren't exactly the same or doesn't manifest in the same way, I can, you know, so I'm actually like curious rather than like, no, you're wrong and you need to agree with me. Right.
Right.
And then sometimes I might actually want to change someone's mind or try to. I try not to touch changing it, but I might be like, my goal is to try to at least show them a different way of thinking. And that's kind of what I want to do. So I'm going to listen very carefully to what they're saying. I'm going to try to understand their values and principles. I'm going to try to appeal to those. I'm going to try to use tools of persuasion that acknowledge where they are. Like, that's another way of being. And then sometimes I'm like, I just have to tell you what my experience is right now. Like, this is what I believe. And it's important for me, for myself, to say something. I think a lot of those like conversations with your racist family member or whatever, that's really the category they're often in.
Yeah.
You know, these are like, sometimes these are like fights you've been having for decades. You probably are not going to change that person's mind. It's not about that. Right. It's just about knowing that you've done the work on yourself so that it's more important to you to say something for your own integrity. And sometimes you won't also. It's not always one or the other, but it's just different conversations, different strategies, different approaches. But all of them have to start with like, I have my own back and I know what's like mine here. And what's me trying to control someone else, which I can't do.
Yeah, that just put off a little light bulb in me, because in me, sometimes I will not engage in a conversation where I want. So like, you know, this friend that I'm talking about, maybe she brought up something that I'm like, I know that like, I don't think this is right. And I think this is rooted in racism, but I don't really have I'm very like logical, debatey kind of person. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm trying to break down quickly as she's saying this, like, where is the logic that leads to this being racist? And I can't find it. So I'm like, it's better to just not engage in this, where instead of maybe the assumptions I'm making is like, if I'm going to disagree with her, I need points to back it up so that I can prove what she is saying is false, so that she will know that I am right. And I am therefore proving that what she is saying is immoral or is wrong.
Right.
Instead, maybe all I needed to do in that situation is be like, you know, I don't really agree with what you're saying. I just, that does not resonate with me. I can't say I agree with you on that. And I can just literally leave it there. And I just kind of had that light bulb. I'm like, that's really powerful to just even be able to do something like that and just be like, no, I don't. I honestly, I mean, you're saying, you know, and I'm saying, I don't really.
I don't agree with you about that. Or like, I think that's a stereotype or like that hasn't been my experience. I mean, it doesn't. I mean, think about it when someone tries to convince you. This is the thing. Like, we're all so myopic when we get like this. Like, think about when someone tries to convince you that what you're saying is immoral. Are you like, oh, my God, tell me more. I'm so interested in your opinion about that.
Yeah.
No, you're like, fuck you. Right. That's like.
Well, or sometimes maybe I'm thinking that people are going to think how I do, because I'm like, well, if someone's got the data to back it up, I may not admit it in that moment, but I'll sit back later and be like, fuck, they hit me with those percentages and I can't argue with that. Like, that person's right, you know?
Yeah, but like, you may be more evolved.
That's right? I'm saying. Not everyone. Yeah, I'm assuming that other people, if I hit them with those facts, that they're going to go home and think about it.
We all think like our own self-conceptions are not accurate.
Yeah.
So everybody thinks that they're amenable to data, but that other people are irrational. But like at some point, some of us are not right about that.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's so true.
And it's so powerful also because when you can show up like that without that sort of like, you're wrong and immoral and I'm going to change your mind. Right. I think sometimes people are actually more inclined to engage with you. Right. Then it's like when you're like, well, I just really, you know, I think that's a stereotype. And in my experience, it's really been the opposite. Like in my experience, you know, undocumented immigrants are working incredibly hard. And like all the people I've ever met who are undocumented had families they're trying to provide, you know, like blah, blah, whatever your thing is. Number one, you're just saying your experience.
Yeah.
Number two, like sometimes I think, not always, but sometimes, and when you are in that calm space, right, then it's almost like if they want to engage, then they have to come to you.
Yeah.
Right. It's like there has to be like some interestness or openness or willingness on their part, because you're just like in a negotiation, like you're just sort of sitting back of like, that's what you think.
Just here's laying it on the table. Know,
yeah. Here's what I think. And then it's like, if they want to engage, they kind of have to come to you, and then you maybe have room for more conversation rather than you jumping into their space and trying to choke them.
Yeah.
To make them see something differently.
Yeah. And I guess it could be as simple, even if you're feeling really impassioned in the moment, don't feel like you can go to that calm space. I'm just thinking for myself. I could be like, no, I just really don't agree with that. I don't. And like,
yeah. And then you can come, like, that's the thing, you build up.
And just let it be.
Yeah, and you build up that, all of a sudden my volume went very low. I don't know what happened. And then you build up that, like, identity with yourself as someone who, like, says what you believe, mm-hmm. and who has your own back and who stands up for what you believe. And then I think over time you get even more and more willing to do that and have those conversations. And it doesn't always have to be aggressive. Like, one of my favorite techniques when somebody tells a racist or sexist joke or whatever, mm. is to just completely play dumb and act like I don't understand, mm. and make them spell it out. Mm. So like, they tell a sexist joke and I'll say, I don't get it. Why is it funny? And then I'll just like keep asking questions so they have to spell out until they get to the point where they have to say like, well, it's funny because women are stupid. Or you're like, whatever they're getting to, which sounds so much worse than the joke.
And like, then wow. you feel very warranted in being like, that's not
by
funny.
By that time, yeah. it's become so awkward and uncomfortable.
Everyone's just silent in the room. We're like, they're just like, well.
But it's so powerful. Yeah. It's like not always about like punching someone in the face. I'm not saying, you know, if you want to punch, go ahead. But like, it doesn't always have to be when you don't have your ego in it of like, I have to attack them or show them they're wrong or whatever, then you can get much more creative.
That's
be like, so, or just be like, I'm so, I don't get it. Wait, why is that funny? What's the, but what, why? Cause what are they like? What?
It's genius.
It's fun.
That's fun.
Well, okay. So off of this, with everything lately, like, do you have any tips with people right now on dealing with social media, let's say? Because right now,
Lord. Everybody should be on social media 10% as much. That's really
that's just to cut that time down.
I know. I mean, I use social media for my work too. Sure. I think that social media is a great way to learn what triggers you. And to do some thought work, digging in, you get to be exposed to all different kinds. You know, I know it's so unsatisfying, but I don't really have tips and tricks because I really think it depends. Like, I do know people who genuinely, they love debating people online. It like doesn't stress them out. They find it fun. Yeah. So then I'm like, okay, well then that person, maybe that is a way that they, you know, I will say one thing I do think, here's one thing I think about with social media. And this happens to me when I'm like, people comment on my post or whatever it is. It's not, if I'm going to engage, it's not going to be because my goal is to change the other person's mind. It's the same thing, right? My goal is going to be to share what I know or my perspective, because maybe somebody reading it who is on the fence or who hasn't fully formulated their opinion or who isn't feeling like, it's like coaching. Sometimes I coach someone and they're super resistant and I'm like, this coaching is not really for them. True. It's like for everybody else on the call watching who's going to learn something because they're not being personally
right. It's not. Moment. Yeah, it's objective for them. They're
yeah, people
observers.
Are very defensive. You know, once people get activated and defensive, you're very unlikely to change their mind in a Facebook fight.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that there's no value to sharing your statistics or your reasoning or your passion or whatever. It may just be for someone else. So it's kind of the same thing. Like, if you're going to engage in it, know your reasons. Right. Make sure you like them. Mm-hmm. Not like I have to show off for my other friends so they know I'm a good enough ally. That's not going to feel good. Mm-hmm. Or I have to change this person's opinion because they're not allowed to think this way. Not going to feel good. It never feels good to resist the fact that other people have intellectual autonomy. I wish I could change it too, but they do. Right. So it's like, what reason's going to feel good to you? Mm-hmm. So it's really, I think it's the same. It's like the tip is the same. Like, how do you want to show up as yourself? And like making decisions from there. So I don't, you know, sometimes I engage. I don't really have a rule. Like, usually it has something to do with like either the audience or, you know, do I even know this person? Do we have a relationship? Do I care enough to try to educate them? Mm-hmm. Do I have a point that hasn't already been made? I mean, I'm a coach, so I always think that like facts and figures, we kind of know sadly about human brains. That those don't really change people's opinion. They just double down. So like the studies show, for instance, if you show people who don't believe in climate change, the evidence of climate change, they actually more strongly don't believe in climate change. They will double down on their original belief. Wow. This is a real problem with human brains that we have to grapple with when we're thinking about how to change people's minds or how to change or our
to
own,
draw
minds.
Own minds. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I don't go in there being like, here's 400 statistics. Like they, you know, I will usually participate if I think that I see a way to, since I do thought work, like give an analogy or a metaphor that might kind of like boop somebody's brain a little bit. You know, like I did a lot of teaching around internalized white supremacy around the murder of George Floyd. And one of the things that I found really effective for appealing to kind of liberal-ish white women who think they aren't racist, mm-hmm. right, was mm-hmm. to say like, hey, you know, we have a relationship of trust and authority already. Like you believe me, you follow me, you listen to my podcast. If you've believed me and it's resonated with you when I tell you that you've absorbed social messaging about your body or about being mm-hmm. a woman, I want you to contemplate the idea that you may also have absorbed social messaging about race and racism. And that mm-hmm. was like a very effective way of trying to show someone something new in a way that wasn't about calling them racist. It wasn't about even facts and figures. It was just sort of in my wheelhouse. Like, this is what I do. This is where I have authority. This is where I am effective, of showing them a way that like their mind might be being impacted that they didn't know. And I found I had a lot of people respond to that in a like, oh, okay, mm-hmm. yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think you have to know kind of like, what's your special sauce? Like, what can you offer the movement? How can you engage? And how can you, I always think like, how can you think about not so much like, I don't like the content of what this person's saying. It's, how is this person thinking? Like, what can I see about their thought process mm-hmm. here? And if I do want to try to engage, like, that's what I always try to get at, right? Because mm-hmm, otherwise mm-hmm. it's like arguing about whether somebody likes something different than you like. You know, it's like when somebody has like a normative, like an emotional attachment to something in that way, it's like you can't really argue with them about that yeah. and showing them math isn't going to change it. But sometimes if you can be like, oh, I see that you really care about X, and so it seems like this makes sense. I really care about X too, and I see it this way. This then makes, it's like a different way of kind of trying to speak to them. Mm-hmm.
That makes mm-hmm. a lot of sense. I also think you do make a good point about the audience thing, because for me, it's been easier for me to digest sometimes when I see someone else. If we're talking about the conversation about white supremacy, I remember years ago, I was following someone, I can't remember who it was, but it's one of those people who's now really, really famous for anti-racist work in white women. A black woman, and she would take, she would basically reply to people, and I'd see her calling out people in the comments, and I could read that as an unemotional observer mm-hmm. and see that and be like, oh shit, I was maybe had that same yeah. thought as that person she called mm-hmm. out. And even though that person might have felt incredibly defensive and attacked, it might not have worked for them. Right. Me as an observer, I was like, oh fuck, yeah, I would have done the same thing. Okay. But since I wasn't the one being attacked, it's like easy to do that work in myself and be like, I am not going to say that anymore because now I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This coaching is like that too. Like when you're coaching someone directly, their brain is like, they're like a deer in headlights. You know, they're just like, you know, totally like, what are you saying? My thoughts are wrong about, you know, just like, but everybody watching, it's like, oh, it's so easy to see it. Sarah, right?
Like you're removed. The ego yeah. is removed from the situation. Right. Like you're saying.
I mean, that's a good thing about social media, I'll say. So it's a lot of bad talk, but when you have a one-on-one conversation, there's no audience who can benefit from it if the other person doesn't respond. And on social media, other people may read and think.
That's very true.
Excellent.
Sorry, bros, had to turn the air on quick because it's 115 degrees outside and the studio is starting to catch on fire. Mm-hmm. Okay, I know this is kind of a big question to end you on, but I...
What is the meaning of life?
No, yeah. During...
How do we get to heaven?
Help me get to heaven, Gara.
How does the thought take us to heaven?
Okay, so during... the pandemic and quarantine life, I know something that a lot of people have been discussing is weight gain, body image. And I know that you talk a lot about that. and you have some great episodes on your podcast that I'll definitely link below. But can you give us like a little bit of an overhaul of the, just help maybe some of our broads, just a little body image overhaul of our broads as we're, you know, everyone's quarantined up and there's the fixation on
memes about it. All the, I'm like, oh God,
all the memes about the quarantine weight gain are like, don't worry, you can do this workout to lose the weight that you've gained while, you know, all this. So do you mind doing a little... Well, overall,
that is such a huge topic.
I know.
Where to start? I mean, that's like the whole. I don't. Can I just be like, here's the episodes you should go listen to?
Yes.
I just, did an episode called "Diet Culture, Fat Phobia, and My Journey," where I talk about my experience of this and that. You know, unlike when it came to kind of sexism and other things, I already intellectually knew they were an issue, even though I hadn't, before coaching, I hadn't figured out how to change how I actually thought and felt personally, but I was like aware that society was impacting how I thought about myself. And when it comes to diet culture and fat phobia, I was like completely in the cult, you know, just like believed everything I had been taught about weight and size. And so I really had to have like a whole full awakening in order to even do the thought work. So I understand what it's like to sort of be in the, to be completely in it. You know, weight gain is not inherently bad or ugly or unhealthy. Most of what you see in the media about weight and health is inaccurate. And this is, I am not a like science doubter. I believe in vaccines. I believe COVID is real. I'm talking about like the media and even most medical professionals don't actually know what the peer reviewed science on weight and health says. Because most doctors get half an hour of nutrition science in medical school. And our society is incredibly fat biased. So if you go back 100 years, there was all of this quote unquote science about the inferiority of, you know, the quote unquote colored races and the superiority of white people. There has always been science, quote unquote science, not usually the real good science, but a lot of like just general knowledge. Everyone knows, it's obvious, it's in the news, and my doctor told me kind of science that backs up whatever a culture's oppressive systems are. There was a lot of quote unquote science about men being smarter than women and women being hysterical. And, you know, in every age, like you got to be real suspicious when all of the supposed science is supposedly lining up with kind of a moral condemnation and oppression of a whole group of people. So if you actually look at the science, for instance, being underweight is dramatically more dangerous to your health than being overweight. Anorexia has the highest mortality of any mental health disorder because being underweight is so damaging to your health compared to being overweight. On the extremes, there are health impacts of being very, very underweight or very, very overweight. These are all terms we've made up that don't have specific definitions. But within that, you are usually being moderately quote unquote overweight is actually more protective against death, for instance, than being moderately underweight. So, and you know, diabetes is not caused by what you eat. There's like a lot of science out there. People should Google the health at any size movement to learn about what actually causes physical problems. Some of it can be caused by your metabolic system, which can be impacted by what you eat and is genetic. It actually has nothing to do with weight. There are thin people who have blood sugar regulation problems too with whatever that produces for them. Again, some combination of genetics, lifestyle, environment, like what you're raised around, environmental pollution, stress, food deserts, all of that. There's also quite a bit of science now showing that many of the detrimental effects that are attributed to higher weight individuals are actually caused by yo-yo dieting and how it fucks up your endocrine and hormonal system. And to the systematic stress of living in society as a fat person, just like we are coming to see that a lot of the disproportionate outcomes in the health disparities among people of different races, especially in America, are partly caused by economics and access to healthcare, but also are literally caused by the stress of living under racist conditions and not getting appropriate medical care, the same way that fat people don't get appropriate medical care, right? Not getting the same kind of attentiveness, not having the same kind of outcomes. So, basically everything you know is wrong. you have been socially conditioned to hate and fear your body. As a woman, you've been socially conditioned to be alienated from your body, to think it's an object that you should try to control. and shape, and that your moral worth and your appeal and your everything is based on it. I will stop talking about this because it's going on forever, but I'll say this one interesting thing that I learned recently that I'm currently obsessed with because it just shows how culturally constructed it is that I think not a lot of people, but like people have heard before, you know, like different societies have different beauty norms. That's totally true, right? In societies where there's not enough food, being plumper or rounder is considered beautiful because mm-hmm. it is associated with elite, with the elite and with having enough to eat. Mm-hmm. Now we live in a society where there's for some people still don't get enough to eat even in America, but for people of certain economic classes, there's an overabundance of food, more than anyone could ever eat. And so being thin is associated with eliteness and is seen as beautiful. But in America, the like association of thinness and morality was in part created very consciously in the 1830s by women's magazines as part of upholding the institution of slavery. So in the 1830s, women's magazines began exhorting white women to control their figures and their diets and restrain themselves around food in order to demonstrate the superiority and sort of Christian moral character they had compared to Black people, enslaved Black people, especially enslaved Black women who were supposedly gluttonous and lazy and overly sexual. So you see this like creation of this ideology happening like in real time. You fast forward 100, you know, almost 200 years later, and is it any wonder that women feel guilty about what they eat? Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. Which makes no sense on the surface. You're like, my cat has never felt guilty about what he eats. Right?
Like, it's like a decomposing mouse. He never feels guilty about it. Right. Yeah.
Dogs will sometimes feel guilty if they're caught, but like animals will like eat your food while you're turned away. They don't feel moral, you know, mm-hmm. shame about that they ate it. Maybe if they stole it, they feel bad about that. But if you give them a burger, they definitely don't feel guilty that they ate it, right? Like all of the, so I mean, all of which is to say there is not a small hack, honestly, for like feeling better about your quarantine weight loss because it is like such a massive deprogramming that has to go on in your brain. But you could start with a basic thought like, it's possible that my weight does not determine my worth. It's possible that like how much adipose tissue is on my body doesn't have anything to do with whether I'm allowed to exist or not, or I'm a good person. It's possible my body is an animal and a home for me to live in and not an object for me to constantly be shaping and trying to change. All sorts of baby step thoughts. Listen to the podcast.
I will link some of those episodes below because they are game changing. Kara, I mean, you're a goddess that I worship. And I'm so grateful for you.
Being a coach, I know that that's about you and not about me, but thank you.
Everybody. Just you can take it anyways. Well, thank you so much. We so appreciate you. All those episodes will be linked. Can you tell the people where they can get coached by you and find you?
Yes, you can find me on my podcast called Unfuck Your Brain. It's available anywhere you get your podcasts or at unfuckyourbrain.com. And if all of this piqued your interest, you can come join The Clutch, which is my feminist coaching community. And it's where I go deep in all the stuff that we've been talking about. I teach a step-by-step system for, we've talked a lot about this, like, got to figure out what you're thinking, then how do you change it? So in The Clutch, I teach you a step-by-step process you can use to do that for any area of your life. And then we've got tons of coaching support from me and other coaches and fellow community members to help you apply it to all the areas of your life that you struggle with. It's my favorite place.
Amazing. It'll all be linked. Kara, thank you so much. Broads, let's start working on unfucking our brains.
Yes.
And we'll chat soon.
Chat soon.
Thanks for having me.